Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us here on The Conversation, Hawaii Talks. We reflect on the two-year mark of the devastating Maui wildfires. We focus on recovery and resilience. We talk to the Hawaii Visitors Bureau about marketing Maui to boost our economy. We also hear about how the county's agencies are taking stock of their capacity in response to our wildfire risk. Our mental well-being is also on the list, living through the trauma and post-fire stress. And taking heat over geothermal, it's a long and rocky road to exploring alternative energy in our own backyard. Plus, we talked to one man who went all the way around Hawaii Island on foot. He tells us what the experience taught him. You're tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Maui's recovery includes building back our economy. So today we share a conversation we had about marketing Maui to boost the visitor industry hard hit in the months following the wildfires. You may recall empty hotel rooms were used to house the thousands of people whose homes were destroyed. And industry leaders grappled with how to provide info for tourists about what was open and what was closed. This past session, lawmakers set aside $6 million to market Maui. The hope is to bring back jobs for locals and to help the many small businesses that are still struggling to survive. We talked to the Hawaii Visitors and Convention Bureau about its marketing plan. We hear from three voices. Aaron Salah is its president, Tom Mullen, its chief operating officer, and Jeffrey Essinger, senior director for Market Insights. We hear from them in that order. What's your sense that we need to do to keep Maui healing and keep Maui going forward?
As one cultural matriarch on Maui told me, that one of the most important things we want to do is to bring joy back to Maui. I read that to mean infuse some energy into bringing people, bringing visitors, talking to community members, bringing community members back out. And so part of the effort of this particular campaign is to focus some of those resources. I think the idea is that the governor heard that call. The governor saw the need and directed the usage of these particular funds for this effort. These particular funds were guided through HTA and partners. And basically the plan that we're executing against is one that HVCB was given by the Hawaii Tourism Authority to implement on behalf of. And so what we did was to pull a partnership together with wholesalers, consumer tactics, social media effort, et cetera, to try to do just that, infuse some energy into Maui. We all feel the sort of economic pangs of what has happened as a result of the fires. And likewise, I think we want to be extra sensitive to how that affects community. And so bringing visitation back in a empathic and sensitive, but also joyful and celebratory way is key to the success of this.
And Tom, I know as we talk about, as Aaron says, bringing the joy back, some of it is getting back to work. You know, and so many folks rely on jobs in the industry over there. But what has been the approach in rolling this $6 million campaign out?
Well, as you talked about, the governor approved the $6 million plan. And so we went into action as quickly as we could. Unfortunately, we're a little bit late in the market that we want it to be. But we have a program that's got wholesalers involved in it. The wholesalers are key because they bring value to the marketplace, to the consumers. And that's one of the things we heard from consumers is the price of coming to Hawaii. So this is a value-focused effort with the wholesalers. Lots of effort in there. Most of their campaign is going to be hitting in the late part of the summer, August, September, October. So that's when we're going to see, we hope to see the real ramp up at that time of bookings, which should drive things in the fall and into the first quarter of 2026. We also have other things that allow consumers to book directly with properties as well. We're running flights of media that's going to drive that a couple times this year, as well as a social campaign that's going to have some new voices about Maui and talking about Maui and coming back to Maui.
So you folks anticipate then this actually materializing late August, early September?
That's when the bulk of the tactics are going to be out in the market with the consumers, and that's when we expect to see activity, which will be bookings into the fall and into the first quarter of next year. That's when they would be arriving in Hawaii, booking in that period to arrive in Hawaii in the first quarter of next year.
So maybe it works out. We have this anniversary, and there's some solemnness and sensitivity about what we just went through as a community, as a state, and then to maybe see those numbers come back in to help our economy bounce back.
And I think, as Aaron said, we want to make sure that when we bring this back, we're bringing it back in a way that we're responsible and bringing it back, and the residents and the community can absorb what we're bringing back into the marketplace. So that's very key in this whole thing.
Do we have a theme?
It's people, the place, Maui.
The people, the place, Maui.
Yes. And then we have a special offers page that has special offers for all Maui businesses, a bunch of Maui businesses that are driving offers to consumers. And there's also offers on there for other parts of the state as well. But when you first go on the page, you go right to the Maui page so we can support Maui immediately.
We talk about the businesses, whether it's the hotels, maybe small businesses also that help to support the visitor industry. What can you share about the insights from where we were 2 years ago and where we're at now?
Yeah, definitely. We are definitely not back to where we were pre-pandemic as well as pre-fires, but we are seeing gradual growth as we continue to move forward. Even though that our arrivals have not recovered at the same rate, we are seeing increased spending of those visitors who are actually arriving. And in turn, what those visitors are able to do is take that those expenditures and push them throughout the entire community. It's not just for hotel rooms. It's not just for car rentals. It's for restaurants. It's for retail. It's for activities. So the entire county or the entire island can benefit from that increased economic impact.
Is there, I don't know, a particular way that you folks are tracking the success of this campaign?
Sure. We are working with a market research firm on the continent to help us create a baseline. It's a three-part research project. What we did is we created a baseline to see what, before we went into the market, what the West Coast consumer thinks about Maui and Hawaii in particular. Are they motivated to come? Are they intending to come? What are the things that they think when they think about Hawaii? All those before they saw our messaging. And then what we'll do is what Tom mentioned, we're going to have our heavy up in August and through the early fall. We will follow up with that group right after with some of the examples of the creative that they have seen, whether that be with our wholesale partners or the consumer partners or social media, to see if it resonated with them and if they had seen it in the market. Then the third phase will be to, in the second phase, they'll be saying if they intend to visit Hawaii in the next 6 to 12 months. And then we're going to go back and we're going to then research to see if those people actually did come. And if they did, we'll measure their spending and how long they stayed and their behavior and things like that. So we're really trying to thread the needle to have a true understanding from where we started from and where we're going to end up.
And Tom, is there anything different that we're doing now that we hadn't done before to promote Maui?
We've got a lot more emphasis on Maui, that I would tell you. A lot more money going to help Maui. But the messaging, I think, is the same. It's around the people telling stories. It's about the people on the island and what they want people to come and see. So I don't think it's anything different than that.
And then, Aaron, any final thoughts on what you want listeners to understand about what we're trying to do to help rebuild Maui?
The state has already mandated this turn toward regenerative tourism. And so what HVCB is ultimately concerned over is understanding what the codification, the tactics of that really ultimately look like. What are the values that drive regenerative tourism as opposed to tourism of the past? And so we're trying to be really very cognizant of that. This is one campaign that affords us the opportunity to check ourselves. And as we move forward, we're starting to infuse some of the values that we think drive regenerativity, and not simply thinking that we want a visitor to come and then to leave the destination better than it was when they arrived. Really just, I want to understand the tactics of that. I want to understand how that actually gets done on the ground. We're in a learning phase at the Bureau right now, going through a strategic plan. But that strategic plan really is ultimately driven by our ability to do good work in and with community, in and with the market. And so this particular campaign affords us the opportunity to do that good work and then check ourselves as a result of the results of that work. And so we're excited about that. We're excited for Maui. We have high expectations, and hopefully those expectations are met. And as Jeffrey noted, designing the metrics so that we can measure ourselves in the work that we do and measure the market's response to that is really key. A part of that regenerativity is then designing the metrics that include how a community responds, how the community's expectations, a community desires for that visitation, for that experience, how that experience all mutually supports the entire ecosystem is key to our success. We're paying attention.
And we saw the HGA campaign rollout that tried to explain to people, we want to welcome people back. We want them to be sensitive. I don't know, anything else that you're doing to build on that, just because it is a little dance that we've got to deal with because of the sensitivity of the time.
Sure. I will say this. It's not really our place to say that Maui is welcoming visitors. It's Maui's responsibility and Maui's prerogative, really, to say that Maui is open. And so the ambassadors that we're using, the voices, the story, HVCB, we're just story carriers. The storytellers are the people of the place. And so we are engaged with people from Maui, talking about their experiences on Maui, talking about what their expectations of visitation are on Maui. And so that opportunity affords us to follow through, I think, on a commitment that HVCB made several campaigns ago, that we were going to elevate the power of the influencers of the places that we are telling stories about. I think that's key to understanding what the future of tourism in a place like Hawaii is. And so that all of that really part and parcel of who we are as a bureau responsible for the entire ecosystem is key to the extended strategy of our organization.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for carving out your time.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We have been hearing from leadership at the Hawaii Visitors and Convention Bureau, Aaron Salah, Tom Mullen, and Jeffrey Essinger. And later this week, we will check back with a small business that we've been keeping tabs on over the ups and downs of recovery over these past 2 years.
The Apple TV Plus series Chief of War is out, and if you've got questions, listen to HBR's podcast, Feathers and Fire. I'm Russell Subiono. Join me and Mehana Makainai as we discuss the themes of each episode and talk about our favorite parts. New episodes of Feathers and Fire are available Saturdays on all podcast platforms and at HawaiiPublicRadio.org.
Support for HPR comes from the Scheidler College of Business at UH Manoa, offering the Distance Learning Executive MBA and Master of HR Management. Learn more at scheidler.hawaii.edu/executive.
You know, this week, the Hawaii Journalism Initiative has been taking a look at disaster response in Maui County. What's changed in the past 2 years? Reporter Colleen Owechi has interviewed officials from the Maui Fire Department and Police Department, and today's story focuses on the Maui Emergency Management Agency. She joins us now. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning, Catherine.
Yeah, so, the story obviously is very close to the surface because we had that scare yesterday in Ka'anapali.
Definitely. It was definitely an eerie time, right, to be under a red flag warning and have a fire break out in West Maui just as it did a couple of years ago. And so I think people are definitely on edge. But something that we noticed that was definitely different than 2 years ago was the type of response and the public information that was put out to the community. I think the Maui Emergency Management Agency and the county as a whole has really worked towards increasing the level of notifications they give to the public and the ways that people are able to find out about what's happening in their area and if they need to evacuate.
Yes, messaging so key.
Yes, definitely. And they said that was one of their priorities after the fire, because that was something that officials really got criticism for, was not setting off the sirens that people said could have helped people know what was happening and get out earlier. And of course, cell service failed, so people were just in the dark about what happened. And so now there's a new system that they've been using called Genesis Protect that has real-time evacuation notifications. People can click on the zone where they are and see, hey, am I under orders to evacuate, or am I being told prepare but not yet, or am I told your area is safe? And so that's a new platform they've been using to give people real-time location-specific information in an emergency.
And the county has new tools as well, right? Maui Police Department has a new helicopter, that kind of thing.
Definitely. I think that's been some of the biggest changes since the fire 2 years ago, is they've really been investing in more staffing. You know, MEMA has nearly tripled in size from, they had 9 staff before the fire, to now they're getting to, you're going to be close to like about 28. And the fire department has also added 29 new positions, and they've really invested in more equipment. You know, they're getting newer fire trucks. They're working with Hawaiian Electric and their new system of cameras and weather stations that are looking for potential risks. And so all the agencies have really been getting more equipment that's going to help them respond better to fires. The police department also got a new helicopter that has night vision capabilities, search and rescue, and fire capabilities. And they unveiled it at the end of July, and already it's been used for a couple fires, including the Ka'anapali fire we had yesterday, and during the tsunami warning when they needed to let people know what was going on.
Yeah, because the situation with roadblocks, right, became an issue when those access points were choked. So, yeah, definitely something, eyes in the sky, that will help with the coordination.
Absolutely. That's the one of the biggest things, I think, is just making sure that when an emergency happens, there are ways for people to get out and people know what they're supposed to do. So the two main ways of doing it is, one, the program I mentioned earlier, where people can get real-time notifications. And also on the county side, they're trying to acquire more land so that they can connect some roads that were dead ends during the fire, or just improve like the widening of the road, or different areas that really were high risk and were choke points during the fire. The Maui Emergency Management Agency is using this AI technology to map out areas that could be improved for evacuations, and they're working to do that for the high risk areas and eventually for the whole county.
Yeah, because you know, you don't want gridlock when we need to get people to higher ground or to safe areas, as like you said, we saw with the tsunami and the recent wildfires.
Definitely. There was some gridlock during the tsunami warning, because a lot of people were coming out of South Maui and going into Central, and there's one main way to get out of that area. So that was a little tricky, and again, these new programs we're using, only time will tell how effective they are, but we're seeing some good feedback in some of these instances where during the tsunami warning, we talked to residents and businesses, and they said, you know what, this is a lot better than during the fires. We were told a lot more information. We felt more prepared, and we took it much more seriously.
Yeah, and they're using drones too, right?
Yes, during the, there was a fire last summer in Kula, which is also another scary thing, because it reminded people, it was close to the one that happened in 2023. And during the 2024 fire last year, they used drones to look for hot spots. To make sure that they had fully extinguished the fire. And that was a program that had been started before the fires, but it really has been used a lot more since the 2023 disaster.
And then what else is on tap for the rest of the week?
So we also have another story coming out tomorrow about our conversation with Hawaiian Electric. Of course, they are part of a major settlement, $4 billion settlement, that they'll pay half of. Because it was their lines that set off the fire. And so they've really had to invest in a lot of programs to improve their equipment, as well as their response and preparedness. And I think one of the biggest things is their power shutoff program, that when there is a red flag warning or high risk of fire, they will turn off the power in high risk areas. And that's something that they hadn't done before and seemed hesitant to do after the fire, but they really take that seriously now and really let people know, hey, this is something we might have to do. And they have done it. They did it for the first time last month.
All right. Well, thank you for tracking all this. Thanks again, Colleen.
Thanks, Catherine, for your time.
We've been hearing from Colleen Oweche of the Hawaii Journalism Initiative. Look for her series of stories this week at MauiNow.com. And as we mark 2 years since the August 8 wildfires, we are airing reflections and Maui memories sent in by our listeners. Data analyst Matt Jahowski shared his fears and hopes for a rebuilt West Maui.
2 years after the Maui fires, I am struck by our increased awareness of the depth of the housing crisis in West Maui. Lahaina Town was West Maui's primary source of housing for locals. Many of our families had owned these homes for generations, and these homes were the oldest and therefore the most affordable homes in West Maui. Yet the trends for housing were all pointing in the wrong direction. You know, in 2024, the median single-family home price in West Maui was $1.9 million. That's the highest median home price on the island and the highest it had been in West Maui ever. Even before the fires, single-family homes in West Maui cost almost 20 times more than a local family earned in a year. That's the least affordable housing on the island and probably the state. West Maui has historically had among the lowest rates of home construction in Maui County, and just 40% of new homes built in the last 15 years actually house our residents as owner-occupied homes or long-term rental homes. That means, you know, the remaining 60% or 6 out of 10, they become, you know, second homes for people who don't live here or short-term vacation rentals. This one really struck me. You know, a lot of the temporary housing that has been built and continues to be built in West Maui, like the state built in Lahaina, it has to be temporary because there's not enough water for them to be permanent. You know, right now, these temporary builds are being served by water that would typically serve Lahaina Town. And once Lahaina is rebuilt, that water goes back to Lahaina, and there's not enough water to have people keep living where these temporary housing builds are. You know, a similar side of the same coin, we have housing developments that have been in limbo for years because there's not enough water for them in West Maui. So my fear and the fear of a lot of people is that these housing trends will accelerate and our Kanaka and Kamaaina families will become a smaller and smaller part of West Maui's community. But my hope is that, you know, our reinvigorated local community, specifically in West Maui, but broadly across Maui County, we'll be able to counter these trends and ensure that a rebuilt Lahaina will serve not just as a cultural and symbolic core for Maui Komohana, but practically as a place where our Kanaka and generational Kamaaina families can actually live in and remain rooted in West Maui.
Mahalo for sharing your thoughts. How are you feeling as our communities approach 2 years since the wildfires? What hopes or fears do you have about the future? And what changes have you seen in yourself and your community? Leave us a voicemail on our talkback line, 808-792-8217. Maui's recovery from the wildfire disaster is defined in part by healing. For the people who live and work on Maui, much of the last 2 years has been about addressing collective trauma. Here to talk about our mental health is HPR's Catherine Kluwe-Pachtel. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, you've been talking to a lot of people about this.
Absolutely. And, you know, over the past 2 years, so many fire survivors have just been putting their heads down and really just trying to get through, you know, mounds of insurance paperwork and housing logistics and, you know, building permits and all of these physical necessities. And, you know, through that time, and especially now, people are realizing that, you know, they are struggling mentally as well as with those physical needs. And a national study found that the largest overall increases in mental health decline and suicide rates were seen 2 years after a disaster. So that's where we are right now. you know, it's really important to talk about. And people are starting to realize that, you know, it is something that needs to be addressed on a really personal level. So the UH Maui Wildfire Exposure Study recently released some concerning statistics. They've, you know, been looking at 1,800 adults and 200 keiki since the wildfire, tracking their health. And in adults, almost half of adults are still living in temporary housing. You know, that's something we've been talking about a lot. A quarter remain unemployed despite trying to find work. And they just showed that over half of adults are showing symptoms of depression, with about a quarter reporting moderate to severe anxiety. What's really concerning is keiki. Over half of children between ages of 10 and 17 in this cohort have screened positive for depression, with one in five being in that severe range. And so, you know, it's something that really needs to be addressed. Those researchers talked about, you know, bringing more support into schools. There are resources available, you know, in Lahaina, in West Maui. But just taking that step and realizing that, you know, you may need that help. Blake Rommel was born and raised in Lahaina. He suffered a traumatic life-threatening experience back in 2016. Unrelated to the fires, he went through therapy, and, you know, he can really attest to the success and other things that have worked for him. He's been a really big advocate of mental health support in his community since the wildfires. I talked with Blake about why that's so important to him and what he's noticed in his community.
One important thing is realizing that mental health does and can peak 2 years after a disaster. So if you start to feel that way, just know, like, that's, I don't want to say it's normal, but it is a thing. So it's like recognizing that, right? Being open-minded to what might work for you and being open to, like, trying new things. For some people, it's, you know, getting in the water. For some people, it's maybe it is going the more traditional route of going to a counselor or talking about doing EMDR. Some of it's just like gatherings and some of that normalcy back into your life so you can feel good, like attending community events. And I think that was like the beautiful thing after the fire, right? We saw our community really come together and like be there for one another. We're going to the hubs, we're all checking in. Like, you saw the community really like show the aloha. In reality, a lot of people had to move away after that and be in areas where they're maybe not surrounded by that same community support. And that's why I feel like in some ways it's become harder for people out there because they're not surrounded by that as much as maybe they were towards in the beginning. We just need everyone to kind of like stick around, and we're all in this together. And I think the more people that can talk about it and be open-minded to it, just really let people know how they're feeling, it's going to also like help people realize, yeah, I'm not alone.
Yeah, so some of this is a, like a delayed reaction, right? And we've got to be able to build up our coping skills.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, people have lost friends and family members to suicide, you know, and that's taking a toll on the community as well. You know, it can feel like these insurmountable challenges, you know, navigating all of these recovery processes. For fire survivor Shannon Ee, she has found healing and kind of respite from that, you know, daily life struggles in the wake of the fire through a community effort called Kaiōulu Initiatives. I did a story on that effort that aired yesterday, but they're planting over 4,000 native plants and trees on the hillside above Lahaina. Really great effort that's, you know, involved a lot of fire survivors where they have found, you know, kind of peace from all that's going on in their daily lives. And Shannon Ee says, you know, getting her hands in the dirt and planting something for the future, you know, the trees that her grandchildren will sit under, has been really positive for her. You know, she says watching those trees and plants thrive has been healing.
The vai-vai in what this place feeds us is just, it fills the deepest of my na'au. It fills the pu'uvai. Because, you know, a lot of the time our ohana, the friends, the families who are like closest to us, they get like the harshness of us when we're like unhappy or we're hurting or whatever it is, like we like take it out on them. Aina can carry the things that are like really heavy, the things that are really kauma'a. So that's what this place does. It gives a break from the heaviness, the the eha, the sadness.
Yeah, it's great that she's found something that can help her heal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people are, you know, finding that in different ways. You know, like Blake said, for some people it may be therapy. You know, for some people it may be getting out in the ocean. It may be, you know, getting their hands, you know, planting in the earth. And, you know, for those who are struggling, Hawaii Cares by dialing 988, 24/7 free confidential support if you or someone you know are feeling this weight and struggling right now.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Catherine.
Thank you.
That was HPR's Catherine Kluwet-Pachtel talking about the challenges dealing with collective trauma on Maui in the years following the wildfires.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is coming to Honolulu in October, and HPR members get first dibs at tickets. Make sure you're ready for our member presale starting August 6th. For more info, visit hawaiipublicradio.org/waitwait. Sponsored by Hawaii Pacific University and Honolulu Financial Partners.
On the next Fresh Air, comic, actor, and writer Sarah Silverman. Whether it's talking about sex, abortion, being Jewish, racism, or just daily life, she's willing to take risks to make a point and make it funny. We'll talk about her comedy special, Postmortem, which is funny and emotional. It's about the death of her father and stepmother 9 days apart. Join us.
Beginning this afternoon at 3.
This morning, Honolulu Civil Beat's lead story is about the heat being generated over geothermal exploration. Reporter Blaise Lovell has a deep dive into the push by the state to take a closer look at this alternative energy resource. Good morning, Blaise.
Hey, good morning, Catherine.
Yeah, so you've been tracking some community meetings, and people have been hot under the collar, it seems.
Yeah, so the state is paying this company called Waika Consultants about $3 million this year for a geothermal outreach effort. Now, just to set the scene, so, you know, geothermal is going to be expected to make up a part of Hawaii's renewable energy portfolio as they try to meet their 2045 goal. There's a lot of drilling and testing that needs to take place before they can figure out where geothermal resources might be. And state leaders and state lawmakers, before any of that happens, they want to see which communities might be open to having those types of developments in this area. And so that's sort of what Waika has been hired to go ahead and look for.
Yeah, and from what I understand, what the state has contracted with UH to kind of do this exploration?
Sort of. So the funding for this contract came from the legislature. It went to this agency called the Hawaii Technology Development Corporation, which contracted UH, but UH is really just a pass-through entity. They're not doing any of the work. It's all on Waika, which is the sub-awardee, and the process that this followed ended up avoiding the normal competitive procurement process that would have, you know, required the state to go out, solicit proposals or bids, and have competition on this. So the money was wired through multiple agencies before it got to Waika.
Yeah, but there still seems to be pushback.
Yeah, and, you know, I talked to them, and they acknowledged that they knew going into this there could be a lot of opposition. Most of it has come from Puna. They believe that the reception in other parts of the island has been more positive. We talked to folks who went to meetings in Kona and other areas, and some of their complaints were that there wasn't enough time for open dialogue. They didn't get their questions answered. One of those who was sort of irritated by the process is the county council chairman, Holeka Inaba. He actually went through to a community meeting in Kona and had those remarks. He also had a presentation at the county council And he said he found parts of it that relied on certain aspects of Hawaiian culture. He called it offensive.
Well, and this group, though, that has been going out to the community, I mean, there are some notable people on that team, right? Former OHA Trustee Mililani Trask, you know, folks who are known to the community.
Yes, and that's sort of the reason why Waika says that they contracted those people. So Mililani Trask is working for Waika. Former Senator Malama Solomon has appeared on their panels. They hired a kumuhula from Oahu named Sai Bridges. So those people are all working as cultural advisors of sorts to appear at these meetings to sort of provide a cultural justification for, you know, why these development should take place. They want to push what's called a native-to-native model, where Hawaiian communities that host geothermal projects get some of the revenues. You know, but like I said, with the county council and some parts of the Big Island, that message isn't exactly landing.
Yeah, and they were holding out the model in New Zealand, right, where the native peoples are being able to, you know, get some positives out of these business deals, and so that's what they want to see happen here in Hawaii.
Is that's something they say they hope they can replicate here in Hawaii. Now, whether or not that happens is yet to be seen. Their contract ends at the end of October, and there's no funding to continue it. But they promise to have, you know, for the state, a long-term development plan or roadmap later this year that could lay out the steps they could take to achieving that.
Yeah, anything else that you can share just about the pushback from the community?
One of the questions that keeps coming up is, you know, UH has its own geologists. I asked Waika about that. They brought on geologists from Auckland, New Zealand. They said that's because those people have experience with commercial geothermal developments. UH, also, the reason why they wanted to take this on is they hope that they could get a cut of revenues that could one day pay for college tuition for Native Hawaiian students.
Yeah, but it just seems like, not an easy path, you know, no matter who's interfacing with the community.
Right, and it's a long way. There's still a lot of, you know, testing that they need to do to figure out where those resources are exactly.
Right, and it could be, you know, on other islands besides Big Island as well.
Yes, they've identified places on Maui, even on Oahu, you know, an area where you wouldn't think would have volcanoes. There could still be enough heat and enough hot water down below to, you know, power a geothermal plant.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. But thank you so much, Blaze.
Thanks.
That was Honolulu Civil Beat reporter Blaze Lovell. Look for his story at civilbeat.org.
Hawaii Public Radio is here for you and with you through the magic of discovery.
Brian Eno with a song called The Big Ship. I'm Jeff Long. You are listening to Bridging the Gap. My friend Taylor turned me on to that song, and I remember running on those hot Waianae mornings listening to this song and just feeling like I could just handle anything.
Local music shows on HPR are always brought to you with a personal touch.
So I figured this is too good to pass up, so I'm sharing it with you today on Brazilian Experience on HPR One, and I'm your host, Sandy Tsukiyama.
Support music discovery on Hawaii Public Radio. Donate at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Nearly 300 miles. That's how much ground Kumu Palneva's recently covered on Hawaii Island, and he did it all on foot. It was a 40-day walk coordinated to overlap with Restoration Day, or La Ho'e'oe'ea. Kumu Pal hopes that the journey will get others thinking about what caretaking means to each of us, what it means to care for each other and the land we share. He's hoping to build a retreat center on the island of Hawaii designed for those who look after others and need a break for themselves from the caretaking that they do. He used his walk around the island as an opportunity to raise funds for the effort. He spoke with the Conversation's D.W. Gibson late last week, just a couple of hours after he completed the journey. He begins by telling us how he was feeling.
Actually, I don't feel tired at all. I just kind of feel like kind of looking forward to sleeping in the same place for a little bit, but I'm not tired. I feel better than I thought I was going to feel.
For listeners who don't have any idea what you've just done, would you please just give us a brief thumbnail of what you've just done?
Well, I've gone all the way around the island of Hawaii. It's about 300 miles of walking over 40 days.
Was there anything about the journey that surprised you that you didn't expect?
You know what? Very simply, I didn't expect the sides of the road to be as filthy as they were. Quite frankly, I was disgusted by it. A few years ago, I was part of the camp at Mauna Kea to stop the TMT telescope. And we had a saying up there, if you see trash, pick it up. And if your eyes saw it, then God was saying, your eyes said, pick it up. And that's what my mother used to tell us if we ever went to the beach when we were a kid. We had to clean up that site before we'd swim. And before we left, we had to pick it up. Cigarette butts, baby diapers, whatever was there. And we used to say, Ma, why? Because this land belongs to you. And if you don't take care of it, Mother Nature will come and take care of herself. And you don't want to see a tsunami. You don't want to see how she takes care of herself. That struck me. The filth on the side of our roads on this island. County, state, I will be sending you a letter. The next thing that struck me was the hospitality of old friends. Hey, stop at the house. You're going to have poke and rice. Stopped at this house, had poke and rice. Heard about a caregiving situation where a former Hula student's mother was taking care of her new partner who had like an open heart surgery, like four bypasses. And he talked about how elderly Japanese man, how he survived and how much struggle they had to go through. First stop. And I went, wow. The third thing that struck me in just the first part, the app that we had would say, oh, it's 15 miles from here to Honomu. From Hilo, but it doesn't tell you how it goes up and how it goes down. And if you've ever done mountain climbing, 10 miles up is like 20 miles down. So the birds, the trash, the witnessing, and just the sheer walk and seeing things that you drive by every day, folks, Hilo drivers, we drive by it every day.
Well, and one question in my mind, you know, you've answered it in a way just there in terms of what walking does. It slows you down and you see things. But I guess beyond that very important point you just made, why is walking so important?
Creator made this heart for so much. He didn't make it for us to go 50 miles an hour down a road. He didn't make it for that. Two legs. You know, one time I was really depressed about my personal life. And I was so depressed, I just started walking. This was about 2011. So I've been walking since then. This is crazy. This is how bad and depressed we can be. I thought, I'm going to count how many shades of green I see in my 5-mile walk here in Hilo. And Hilo's green. And I got up to almost 300 or 400 shades of green. Just counting. That's another shade of green. That's another shade of green. Okay, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, until I stopped counting and I just saw it for what it was. It was green and it was all there just for me to look at.
You said at one point, we, for the journey, and you were looking at the GPS that you were using, the app you were using. Tell me a little bit about who you were traveling with.
Well, sometimes one of the guys from either the Order Kamehameha, of which I'm a member, or just friends would say, can I walk with you? Heck yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the big island and look at the map. Oh God, I made it to Honomu. Where's that on the map? It was a trickle of this big island. So I was really glad when Robert McKean, one of the first guys, he said, hey uncle, I'll see you there Sunday morning at 6:30. I want to walk with you. I went, wow. You know, wow. And you know, when you're talking and walking, like right now, you know, if I'm walking with you, we could do some miles. By the time we stopped talking, I mean, we're 5 miles up the road. It made the miles go by, but your legs still are walking. And your heart and your legs are in coordination. But your mind is also in its coordination, because the mind can play tricks. There was times when I walked and went, damn, that's a lot of that Kohala Road. One time a guy walked with me, thank God, from Kauai High to Kona. It's 32 miles. I've never walked 32 miles anywhere. But we had time to talk about how we feel about things, how we feel about our islands, how we feel about how bad we drive here. Boy, we drive bad here. And we need to slow the hell down because we're a dot in the middle of the Pacific. What the hell's a rush? We shouldn't even use clocks out here. We should just use the sun and the sunset. Get it done. What the hell are you in a hurry for? To beat the 4 o'clock traffic? To where? We just get too crazy. We should do a Mamalohoa revive walk because that road is one of the most beautiful roads. There was one part I was walking. There were turkeys walking with me. There were cattle walking with me. Mauna Kea's to my left and Haas to my right. I mean, I said, holy cow, I could hear bees fly by. It was so quiet and beautiful. And down below, everybody's rushing up and down the Hamakua Coast. I don't know why.
Were there any stretches that you walked all by yourself, or did you always have someone with you?
Oh, there were stretches by myself. When you're not walking with somebody, that's a different walking partner, yourself. When you're listening to yourself think, listening to yourself going, I really screwed that up, didn't I? Oh, God, please forgive me for doing that.
Just going through memories in your own mind.
Yeah, to childhood, not just yesterday.
Yeah, I would imagine at those points too, maybe like the traveling companion, it might sound a little hokey to say, but the traveling companion in a way is the Aina.
Absolutely. You know how they say AI? Everything's AI these days. I like the AI of Aina. To me, it's like AI. Advance the intelligence of native Aboriginal people. You know, AI just, you could throw this out in AI. You could AI this talk, right? It's an AI Paul Nevis. But unless you walk with me, unless you know who I am, somewhere in your life, take a journey like this. There's nothing AI can do to create that. We are a special species. It is, it's interesting how our species keeps messing it up. We've got a lot to learn, the human species, but that conversation with the land, there's a queen of ours that I like to refer to. She was so sacred, such a sacred queen. Her name was Olani. She was the mother of Kamehameha II and III. And today we celebrate La Hoi Hoi Ea. So Kamehameha III's mother said, take care of the land. I ended today's closing by saying, don't listen to the negativity. Stop it. Stop it. I had one person in Kau, she says, I don't watch the news anymore. I said, oh, by God, do watch it so you can do something about it. Going and hiding in a cave is not going to solve the problem. Coming out and speaking, hey, that tree means as much to me as my child. That ocean means as much to me as my mother. When we start connecting with the earth as part of our consciousness, some people may say, that sounds a little hippie-ish. Well, maybe it does. I believe you're living in paradise. You were given paradise right where we are, right where I'm talking to you from. How do you live in paradise? Mm-hmm. By going and finding another paradise after you ruin them? We have our heart. Yeah. You know, Hawaiians, you know, put your hand over your heart. Put your hand over your heart. You see the hand over your heart? There's five arteries, each finger. And the heart is called Pu'uvai, the hill of water. The first mountain we climb is not Mauna Kea. This one right here. This one. The one that keeps us alive. The one that helps us love. And the one at times that gets broken. But the one that keeps us in the conversation. And as long as we're in the conversation, as long as we're in that consciousness, there's hope. Stop listening to the negative. And how do we stop it? I believe we stop it with aloha. And I believe aloha is not this fingers up aloha. It's a whole economic system of barter, of sharing resources, time, effort, slowing ourselves down to the beat of this world, not some racy world. that we just press a couple of buttons on a little machine, and there's our answer. It's not an answer. That's pulling data out of a machine. That's not love. I think I learned to appreciate both the land, again, like you said, and like our queen said, the land. Talk to the land. Let the land talk to you. And anybody here that moves here and wants to live by us, I'm sorry. You don't get to stay in your gated little town. Sorry. Our birds fly over your hill. Our planes fly over your house. I'm going to walk right in front of your house and go, hi, how you doing? Because this land talks to me and talks to you too. Why would we want to live here? Because we do this kind of crap. We get crazy, put on some shoes and walk around our island. And it's our island. It's nobody else's island. We have not ceded it. Let somebody else put their flag over it. It's still Hawaii. Will always be Hawaii. Hawaii is eternal. Forever.
That was Paul Neves and HPR's D.W. Gibson talking about Neves' recent 40-day walk around the island of Hawaii. For pictures and video, check out our website at hawaiipublicradio.org. Walk on. Well, we're all out of time. Tomorrow, we plan to check in on a Maui boat captain about recovery after the 2-year mark of the wildfires. Share your comments or questions about what you heard. Call our talkback line, 808-792-8217, or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can find the conversation on Spotify, Apple, or on our website. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.